sample. No cryptosporidium was detected in any of the 499 samples over 10,250 liters collected from the intake. Now, the final round of sampling for the upstream locations, what the EPA referred to as hotspots, was taken yesterday. And we should get the results from that test by the end of the week. But so far, we have detected no cryptosporidium in any of those 270 upstream samples. These results provide clear evidence that Portland has a legitimate case for requesting a variance to the surface water treatment requirements of the LT2 rule, and we're moving forward accordingly. Over the next 4.5 months, we're going to be compiling, analyzing, and organizing the data that we have collected through our sampling plan and study and other relevant sources to develop a comprehensive and persuasive argument and treatment variance application for submission to the EPA. Now, despite these encouraging results from our data collection efforts, EPA has indicated its extreme skepticism of our case. They've suggested, in fact, that it plans to reject our variance request regardless of the city's water quality results. And I sent you on Friday a quote from the letter from the District 10 director. To our knowledge, no public water system in the country has ever attempted to obtain a variance from a provision of the Safe Drinking Water Act on the basis that the system's raw water quality was of such a nature that additional treatment is not necessary. We're unique in the nation, and we're plowing new ground. The EPA is reasonably concerned that a precedent may be set and has been extremely conservative in responding to our interests and efforts in obtaining a treatment variance. This is, as you probably know, our third proposed approach on a variance plan, the first two having been rejected by the EPA. This approach has been significantly modified as we've gone along in order to meet concerns and objectives voiced by the EPA. We believe we've met the standard identified in the rule and by the EPA, and that we're going to be able to demonstrate that our raw water cryptosporidium level is below the 0.0000750 oocysts per liter that's stated in the rule. However, to respond and hopefully address the EPA's skepticism about a Portland treatment variance application, we're proposing to enlist the technical assistance of an expert team of water quality professionals and academics to assist us in developing the scientific and technical underpinnings of our treatment variance application. We believe this investment is in assuring the strength of our application is critical to assist the congressional delegation, our congressional delegation, to obtain fair consideration of the variance by the EPA, and that such an investment will be necessary as well if the city eventually decides to pursue any legal remedies relative to the EPA's decision making. We are proposing a sole source contract with CDM, Camp, Dresser, and McGee to provide us with the range of expertise and support in developing and writing the treatment variance request and the supporting documentation. Now, they have critical experience working with other water utilities to create compliance strategies with drinking water regulations, and they are uniquely qualified for this project. The lead on this project is Dr. Philippe Daniel, and Dr. Daniel played a critical role as a consultant to the Massachusetts Water Authority in their successful 1999 to 2000 lawsuit against the EPA regarding the agency's attempt to mandate filtration. In addition, CDM has no financial interest in the outcome of our variance attempt. They're not party to any of our current contracts related to LT2. The not-to-exceed value of the contract is $600,000. We do anticipate that data or research relevant to our application that is currently unknown may become available prior to our planned submission next spring. The proposed budget is intended to ensure that any and all any and all relevant, scientific research or analysis is included in that final application. We did speak with Dr. Daniel yesterday. He is anticipating that 5 to 10% of the total contract amount will be used by MWESB firms, primarily in the technical writing portion. He knows also that we have a strong interest and a record of robust MWESB participation in all of our projects, and we'll be looking for opportunities to increase MWESB participation in that over the life of this agreement. One final note, while we're no longer engaged in intensive daily monitoring, we are moving to a scheduled monitoring schedule that mirrors the one that's recommended by the EPA, in which they have indicated they will require of us in the event that we are successful in obtaining a variance. That's one of the reasons why we need the assistance of CDM. We still have to continue to devote staff to collecting weekly intake samples, turbidity and stream flow event samples. We had a stream flow, we had a an event last weekend when we had the heavy rain. We had to go out over the weekend to collect samples. And then regular samples at our upstream locations, at tributaries and other locations. So in addition, we're also going to continue our scat sampling, and we're going to need to ramp that up as the spring rolls around for calving season. With that, Yona and I are available to answer any questions you might have.
I'm very impressed with all of your work and the detail, and also thank you for getting the information to us ahead of time and always being available to answer questions. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And I don't think you asked or addressed why this is a sole source, or if you did, I didn't hear.
It has to do with their experience in not only working with other public water systems on regulatory compliance strategies, but they're also one of the firms, or Dr. Daniel is, was one of the consultants used successfully by MWRA, the Massachusetts Regional Water Authority, to successfully challenge an EPA rule back in 1999-2000 that would have required them to filter their system. There are other firms that are available to do that, but they all have a piece of our LT2 compliance strategy over on the UV side. The other major consultant who we would have strongly considered, Marco Aida, was with MWH back then and is now with Carollo, and Carollo is working on our UV system. So that's why we've identified probably the two experts in the country, and one of them has already a role in our UV design. So that's why we went with CDM and Dr. Daniel.
And you mentioned in your statement, because Massachusetts received a variance, right?
They have a waiver, correct?
Waiver, oh, okay.
A filtration waiver.
Yeah, okay. Which we have. We have a filtration waiver as well.
Okay, I was just struck when you said nobody's received a variance to the safe drinking water.
Yeah, and there's a difference between a waiver and a variance. Please don't ask me to explain what it is.
I won't. I just wonder.
I think all unfiltered systems have waivers.
Yeah, that's true. All the six large unfiltered systems, we all are operating under a waiver. Right. But the EPA did not want to grant Boston one.
Okay. Thanks.
Additional council discussion? This is an emergency ordinance. Does anyone wish to testify on 1637?
We had Scott Fernandez signed up.
Mr. Fernandez, thanks for your patience in waiting. Welcome back. If you've appeared before us in various iterations, if you could tell us, in addition to your name, if you're representing anybody.
My name is Scott Fernandez. I'm here as a member of the public. And I want to thank the Water Bureau for their efforts thus far, and thank Commissioner Leonard, and thank you, Mayor Adams, and the rest of the commissioners for being here today. Okay. Almost a decade ago, the community stakeholders determined that an EPA LT2 variance was an inappropriate solution because of EPA LT2 policy inconsistencies and the variance's three-year renewal process making it temporary. It was concluded that a waiver exempting Portland from LT2 was the permanent solution of choice. We have spent 3 years of time and money to meet EPA's inconsistent expectations. As we heard today, they've come back several times changing their expectations. And we are now told, as Dave said, that we cannot see how we could EPA's position is that they could not see how we could recommend to the state that a variance to the ELT2 treatment technique requirements would be granted to the Portland Water Bureau. One of the benefits that we've seen of time over the last decade is we have seen firsthand that cryptosporidium as a microorganism is a red herring in the LT2 process. Cryptosporidium is not a public health problem in municipally treated surface water utilities, as we've seen over the decade. It's time to stop spending money and more time on a variance for Portland. We've already shown that our water meets EPA expectations, and we need to move on as a city council and a city to obtain a waiver from LT2, incorporating congressional help in achieving such an outcome. And I hope that you guys will revisit this whole situation and move to get the congressional help to obtain a waiver that we so readily deserve. We are unique in our watershed, in our water quality, and we're going to spend hundreds of millions of dollars for a problem that doesn't exist. And it never did, and it never will, because we don't have sewage exposure. And that's the bottom line. Thank you.
So just so I understand, Scott, you're supportive of our position to seek the exception, correct?
Exactly.
Okay. And you've been helpful in communicating that with our federal delegation, which we appreciate. And getting the necessary technical expertise so that we communicate in the most compelling way with the federal government, you support that? Yes or no?
It depends on what you're saying. Am I supporting the $600,000 to be going to go forward with this? No, I'm not. Okay. I think that's a waste of money. I think we already have our data. We've made our case through not only the sampling, but through our public health process.
But you want to make sure that we have the best possible case for the feds to win, right?
We already have it. You think as of today.
As of today, I think we have it. Okay. Thanks for your...
Thank you.
Anyone else wish to testify on this matter? Sue, would you please call the vote?
Leonard.
I appreciate the ongoing efforts of the Water Bureau in pursuing this aspect of the LT2 variance, that is the treatment aspect. I remain concerned that the EPA has set a high bar for us to meet with the expectation on their part that we could never meet it, and now that it would appear that we are meeting it, that they may change the rules or ignore our test results. Accordingly, I've had ongoing discussions with Senator Jeff Merkley as late as this past Saturday, when David Schaff, Eddie Campbell, and I met with him in his office here in Portland to bring him up to date with our efforts and then to make sure he understood that we remain very concerned that the EPA may be setting us up to fail and to ask for his assistance in that event, which he has promised to do and has been steadfast since he was elected to the United States Senate in providing us outstanding advocacy in Washington, D.C. In fact, we don't think we'd be at the point we are right now without the efforts he's made on our behalf. So I want to publicly acknowledge my thanks to him and his great staff as well. Aye.
Well, thank you, Commissioner Leonard and Director David Schaff and Yona, for all of your great work on this. I think it's very impressive, and we're continuing to move forward, as Commissioner Leonard said. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Salzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Well, the EPA appears to be engaged in a kind of ever-changing whack-a-mole, you know, criteria for examining our application. And $600,000 is not a small amount of money, but it pales in comparison to what we'll have to spend if we're not successful. So I wish I could, Scott, sort of take your word for it from your lips to God's ears, but this is the EPA. And I want to make sure we've done everything we possibly can to get what the exceptions that we're after. So I support this. Aye. So approved. Can you please read the title for second and call the vote? Second reading, item number 1638.
Authorize a construction contract and provide payment for the Powell Butte Reservoir 2 Phase 2 project. Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Again, thanks to David Sheff and Christine Moody for answering my questions very completely on the first reading. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Salzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 1638 is approved. Can you please read the title for resolution, item number 1639?
Direct the Office of Management and Finance to set aside each year the apparatus replacement appropriation from the general fund into a dedicated apparatus replacement fund for the next 5 years, starting fiscal year 2010 through 11, and resume the regular appropriation to the Portland Fire and Rescue of approximately $1,800,000 plus inflation annually for the apparatus replacement thereafter.
That's the longest title I think you've ever read, Sue. Commissioner Randy Leonard.
Thank you, Mayor Adams. I want to first make sure that I express my appreciation, the Chief's appreciation, and all the members of the Fire Bureau's appreciation for the voters supporting the bond measure that just passed in November, and specifically the provision we're discussing here today, which is $19,800,000. To fund the replacement of aging fire trucks, fire engines, fire boats, and other apparatus. I hope the council recalls was an amount that we identified that was required to catch the city up to the level that we should have been had not the city over a 10-year period or longer consistently not funded the apparatus replacement fund to the tune that OMF has long identified in its projected budgets for the Fire Bureau that needs to be set aside every year in order to timely replace apparatus that is obsolete. I'm bringing this resolution forward to create a special fund that the money that already is part of OMF's ongoing projection that the Fire Bureau needs, notwithstanding the voters' approval of the bond measure, to, in a timely manner, replace obsolete equipment. This fund would have the money, as it's appropriated to the Fire Bureau every year, deposited within it, and it would be drawn upon exclusively for the use of replacing obsolete fire engines and fire trucks and other apparatus. The amount that's identified in the resolution, the 1.8, is the amount that is in OMF's five-year operating plan is required to keep up with apparatus as they wear out. The other reason that I think that it's important for us to not only establish that we need to continue on an ongoing basis paying the $1.8 million into this fund is that it could be tempting for some to try to backfill from what the voters have just authorized other programs, general fund programs the city wants to fund at the expense of contributing out of future general fund allocations, this $1.8 million that needs to, from this point on, be deposited into this fund so that the fund maintains itself at a level that will adequately allow the Fire Bureau to replace apparatus. Chief Klum.
Thank you, Commissioners. John Klum, Fire Chief, City of Portland. Commissioner Leonard summarized it very well, but as we know that we were fortunate enough to have the voters pass that $72.4 million bond, general obligation bond levy this last November. And the $19.8 million, as Commissioner Leonard said, would go to, over the next 5 years, to address our backlog of apparatus. After that five-year point in time, we will need our additional or regular ongoing apparatus replacement budget to carry forward to keep it on our 15-year, 120,000-mile replacement schedule. And as outlined in the 2010-11 budget, Portland Fire and Rescue's apparatus replacement needs to be sustainable is actually at $2.4 million. And when $1.8 million plus inflation ongoing is what's identified as far as ongoing for our apparatus replacement. Once we take care of the backlog over that five-year period of the with the 19.8 that's in the bond, if funding's not designated for apparatus replacement, we're going to start slipping back into the same situation that we had before with the apparatus backlog. The resolution today, if council approves, will prevent that from happening. And what this would ensure would be if the apparatus replacement appropriation continues through fiscal year 2014 and 15 into a designated fund for the intent to start using that in fiscal year 2015-16 to supplement the $1.8 million. That will spread out the effectiveness of this bond for 15 years to the year 2025 before we start slipping backwards. Portland Fire and Rescue feels that this is a fiscally prudent solution to address an issue that was created over time and to make a commitment to the taxpayers that their bond money be leveraged as far as possible in the future. And we appreciate your consideration of this.
So I appreciate this approach, and I'd like us to revisit it in the budget. I'm going to support the resolution because I think it's a good start. I'd like us to revisit it in the budget process because, as you just mentioned, it's actually $2.4 million that's needed ongoing sustainable. Providing safe equipment to get to fires is one of our most basic services, and we need to figure out how to make sure that that happens ongoing, that future councils don't chip away at the budget for your apparatus like has happened before. It's very gracious of the voters to give us this opportunity to catch up, and I'm very interested in, I think your budget committee is meeting today. I'd like to hear more in the budget process about further recommendations beyond this $1.8 million as to how we're going to make sure that that continues to happen. Thank you for your work.
Thank you.
Chief, it's my understanding from my briefing from Ken Russ yesterday that technically we can't bind future councils in terms of an appropriation level. As Commissioner Leonard has pointed out, there's an amount built into our five-year projections, but if the economy tanked again and we had to make tough choices, there's nothing sacrosanct about that fund or any other capital set aside, as we know from the reason we got into this hole, having to reduce our set aside for replacement and use it for other costs. So with the understanding that what we're doing here is setting aside money that's in the forecast into sort of this lockbox for the purpose of effectively extending the benefit of what the taxpayers gave us through the bond, which is going from years 5 to 15 and having adequate source of funds to maintain the replacement, which actually means safe equipment that's safe for firefighters to operate and delivers what the public wants. I support that I just wanted to state the obvious that in doing so, we're not usurping the normal budget process in which we have to every year take a look at how we're allocating money, but we're saying that this approach of preparing for the time where the transfusion, the $19 million, runs out, and you're back to the same predicament. By taking this approach, we're creating getting a head start in giving you the resources you're going to need to stay on schedule. So, with that understanding, I will support this.
Understood.
So, I guess I have concerns about this because it does to me seem like we're doing a budget action today, directing a $1.8 million appropriation in perpetuity. And, I just can't get around how that's a budget decision that belongs in the budget process. But I'm also trying to reconcile this with statements that were made when we were considering this bond measure that said we would not need $1.8 million or we would not need a general fund apparatus budget this coming fiscal year if the bond measure passed.
Who made that statement?
No, I call that.
I believe it was you.
Well, I've reviewed the transcript leading up to today, and I didn't make
Well, it may have not been at the council hearing, but it may have been in discussions. But I remember that very specifically.
I don't recall it, Commissioner.
Yeah.
If I could, just on that point, Commissioner, because I had the same question when Ken Russ visited me and Andrew, and I was satisfied that the context for that comment actually, for me, that I heard, occurred in the connection with the PSSRP discussion, where there might be some
I know what you're talking about.
Reduction in general fund support versus this. And my recollection, Chief, was your testimony on this point was that you may not need the full amount of the 1.8, although when I went back and checked your testimony, you didn't commit to one thing or another, but you didn't specifically say to us in response to my question that you only need half or a third or whatever. So I'm satisfied that there wasn't that representation to the council.
As I said, it may not have been the council, but I'm not confusing it with the PSSRP because I remember that one too. And then my other concern is because we're now going to have four high-speed rapid response vehicles that our traditional 15-year, 120,000-mile replacement standard will be prolonged for vehicles because we won't be using those big vehicles as much. And so that's the other concern I have. So I guess it comes down to I feel like I'm making a budget decision outside of the budget process, and I feel that we're not sufficiently allowing for the new rapid deployment vehicles and their impact on giving us longer life for our heavy-duty apparatus. So I cannot respectfully support this at this time.
Okay. Is there additional? Sir?
I just want to respond to that. This, notwithstanding how you feel about it, this is not a budget decision. It's a resolution that still requires the council to go through the budget process and adopt a budget, and the council by its own majority vote can fund the budget at whatever level that it wants. The fundamental important part of this resolution to me is certainly the amount of money that it identifies that is already identified as the ongoing amount that should be set aside, but that it actually creates a fund that is identifiable and stands out as a separate fund. There was discussion last July when this was referred to the voters that some of that apparatus replacement money or all of the apparatus replacement money was a little fuzzy in the budget process, and that some council members didn't really understand the nature of what that meant. And I'm more reacting to that conversation and trying to create a separate fund so that it's clear as a line item in the budget that it is a standalone fund. Certainly, if the Fire Bureau determines at some point the apparatus are in frontline condition, notwithstanding the amount of miles on it, I'm sure they're going to choose not to replace that apparatus. But I think that this is actually a responsible way to move forward, so we don't put ourselves in the position again of having to go to the voters. And hearing what I heard as I was campaigning for this is, why didn't you adequately plan for this in your budget over the years? Why should I vote for something that you have the responsibility to fund? So this is the response.
Could I just get clarification on one thing you just said? So I appreciate the fact we're creating a dedicated apparatus fund. I appreciate the fact that we're using the budgeted money already in the forecast to the extent the council at budget time elects to continue the $1.8 million appropriation would go into that fund.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate the fact that the intent, as the chief has noted, is to in effect stretch out to 15 years solid financial footing for the apparatus replacement fund. But if at some point the chief or a future chief decides to use that money or propose to use that money for another purpose, that would come back to council?
You would have to. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
All right. Does anyone wish to testify on this matter? Sue, would you please call the vote on the resolution?
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz?
I share Commissioner Saltzman's concern that this, I'm not quite sure why we're doing this today. I would have preferred to have done it in the budget process. Having said that, I think we need at least this amount of money stashed away to start looking at the ongoing apparatus replacement. I'm encouraged that it is locked up in this fund and that it can't be used for cuts or other purposes. And I will want to have many more discussions. And as Commissioner Fish said, this is a resolution. We can, as part of the budget process, revisit it and decide whether it needs to be more or less or what. So that's why I'm comfortable supporting it today, although I would have preferred for it to have been done in the budget process. Aye.
Fish.
Yeah, I again, appreciate the way Commissioner Fritz and Saltzman framed the question of timing, and I had those very same questions when I got my briefing. And because it's a resolution and doesn't bind us technically in what we do at the budget time, I'm not as concerned with that. But I do want to acknowledge a point that Commissioner Leonard raised, which was
a recurring criticism, and I think we read it in almost every editorial that came out against the bond measure, was why aren't we doing a better job allocating general fund resources over time to cover these costs? So the truth is, by continuing the appropriation at whatever level the council deems appropriate and putting it away to be used when these other resources are exhausted, strikes me as good financial planning. And it doesn't, nothing here binds us in terms of the budget process, although I think it's cleaner to do it during the budget process, but it is a resolution. And I think the most important thing is it ensures that we have 15 years of sound financial footing to meet the important need of apparatus replacement, which after all is a safety issue. So appreciate the dialogue. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, again, I have no problem setting up a special dedicated fund, but I do believe the part of the resolution that directs an annual appropriation of $1.8 million is a budget decision, even though it's in a resolution. I mean, the last thing we want to start doing is going down the road of adopting resolutions directing appropriations. I mean, I could see a Parks Bureau coming forward with something similar, or the Police Bureau. And even though they're non-binding, they do have a certain gravity when it comes to budget decisions, and those gravity of those resolutions turns out to ultimately be constraints on the council's ability to balance the budget and allocate the precious general fund as it sees fit for the priorities at that particular time. And as I also stated, I believe with the new high-speed emergency response vehicles, the Bureau will have the apparatus replacement cycles are going to be longer for our existing heavy rigs because they'll be used less. So, as I said, I don't feel this is an appropriate decision for us to be making at this time. It should be through the nuts and bolts of the budget process. So, respectfully, again, I vote no.
Adams.
Well, this is an official public opportunity for me to thank you, Commissioner Saltzman, and your campaign team. Sorry, Commissioner Leonard and your campaign team for putting your political chits on the line to get this passed. And I think the most salient and important message this resolution sends is we are fulfilling your commitment on our behalf that we wouldn't play financial shell games if they passed the bond measure. And so I think that's important. And so this will get, of course, tested and scrubbed and discussed as all other council commitments through the budget process, but it, I think, draws an important line in the sand that the voters expect of us in terms of fulfilling our word in the bond measure. Aye.
Here, just a quick update on timing. We have a time certain at 3.
Correct. We're in recess until 3 o'clock.
I expect that to be at the absolute outside 30 minutes, and then we're picking up, I guess, the charter.
Maybe 15.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
Great. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Appreciate your comments.